I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne, still shell-shocked by that entrance.
And this is Andrew.
It's round two, guys. Round
I almost forgot two. My name with that intro. I was like, Paul. Yeah, this is Paul. What's happening?
We are down to the Elite Eight, boys. How are
very
we feeling?
Exciting. It's very how exciting. Yeah. I mean, we live in amazing times.
Yes, I don't disagree with you. I mean, interesting times for sure.
Yeah, it is disturbing that some of these characters are called elite now.
I'm just, I'm dying for Jimmy Olsen versus Dr. Doom. I cannot wait for that moment in this podcast.
The elite Jimmy Olsen.
The elite Jimmy Olsen.
Jimmy Olsen, the darkest of dark horses, man. He is going to take this. He's going to ride this train all the way to the finals. You just watch.
It's going to be Jimmy Olsen versus
Herbie.
Bibbo.
All right. No, it's gonna be Jimmy Olsen versus Silver Surfer, and it's gonna be great.
A battle for the ages.
Well, hey, before we jump into March Madness, let's talk a little bit about Daredevil. You know, we talked about the first two episodes, but episodes 3 and 4 have dropped. What are we thinking, guys?
Did we talk about the first two episodes?
Yeah.
I don't recall that.
I think you weren't on the show that day.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah, it's I'm one of those sorry. No Andrew episodes. I know you don't
listen to them. As I like to refer to them, the good episodes.
That's a good one, Wayne. I very much am enjoying a Daredevil so far. I like Kingpin back, very Kingpin ways. You know, when he showed up in Hawkeye, I was put off by how they present him there. But I love that he and Vanessa are in counseling. I think that's fantastic. I love those awkward, you know, very tense conversations. And I don't know if we want to spoil anything, but episode 3, episode 4 both had a pretty strong surprise towards the end of the episodes. So
I got to tell you, the ending to episode 3 just broke my heart.
It was right.
You know, and spoilers, White Tiger, Hector Ayala, I think is the character's name.
Yes.
Is found not guilty in his trial. And, you know, that he gets home, suits back up as White Tiger, walks out on the street and is, you know, shot point blank in the side of the head and just murdered right there on the street. And it just, I mean, I really, really, really liked the character. I love the character design of White Tiger, and I really wanted to see him doing stuff.
Yeah.
And I just broke my heart to see him go. And I know that the actor himself has passed away.
Oh.
But I just really, really hated to see that.
Did he pass away before filming was complete? Is that why they made the choice?
No, I think this was always the plan, but he passed away after the series had taped.
You know, when he was putting on the outfit and the mask, I knew something bad was going to happen because they foreshadowed it with, you know, Matt talking to me like, you can never put it on again. Like, you can never do that again. And so when you saw him out putting on, like, oh, God, something bad's going to happen. But I was not expecting what happened.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting something that dramatic.
I hated that. I really did. I figure we'll get, you know, another character taking on the role of White Tiger, but I wanted to see Hector doing stuff. So gone too soon, both the actor and the character.
Yes. Yeah.
So 4 episodes in, has Matt put on the costume yet?
Just in that flashback that started the first episode.
But I gather it's going to happen in episode 5.
You think?
Just based on what we saw happening on the roof in episode 4. Because, you know, he goes up on the roof and starts playing with his Daredevil toys. And I loved all his different, you know, Daredevil, you know, helmets, you know, and I was like, OK, I'm going to need to see some of these, you know, could you model those for us? You know,
I'm going to need Marvel to make a whole line of them to go along with my Dr. Doom helmet.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
So but who's he going to go after? I mean, yeah, he's up on the roof practicing with his baton and whatnot. But
everyone, the criminal element,
he doesn't know who killed him. Is he just going to start going, you know, alley to alley, beating up informants until he finds out who killed him?
That's kind of what you do.
Yeah, that's the vigilante way.
But, I mean, his theory right now is that the police are the one who killed him.
Yeah, well, they might be. We don't know.
So I don't know if roughing up street toughs is going to lead you to the murder.
So do we know who the bad guy in the subway basement is?
I don't.
I don't recognize the character from the comics. So.
Yeah, I don't think it's been revealed.
The character design does not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the character design is very distinct, but I don't recognize it with the white mask and like the blood around the eyes. I don't.
Yeah, it's almost like a white pillowcase over his head. And, you know, it's not ringing any bells for me, but he seems awfully bad.
And why does he need that blood?
He needs it.
For what?
Hobbies.
Oh, God.
He's got a really interesting decoupage technique. Oh, God.
Okay, well, I looked it up, which I probably should have done before we recorded this podcast. The character's name is Muse.
As in Jason? Jason Muse?
Very similar, except spelled M-U-S-E.
Well, we've seen that. And the we see it sometimes in the graffiti when they have those interstitial shots. I think we've seen the word Muse in several places.
Yeah, Muse is an actual comic character. Huh. Just not one that I'm familiar with, but Daredevil villain. So, and honestly, it looks in the comics extremely similar to the character in the movies. So, I don't know. Yeah, the character hasn't been part of the main storyline, but it feels so out of place, like, you know, with what's currently happening in the episodes. But I will say, you know, I feel like the show has gotten better with every episode. Well, the first two I kind of view as one.
Right.
Yeah.
But then I really liked the third episode, and then I absolutely loved the fourth episode.
So what did you think about the appearance of John Barenthal returning as the Punisher?
I thought it was great. And apparently, you know, there were a number of, like, John Barenthal, you know, he was not going to do it. And then, you know, the show went through a retooling, apparently driven by Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio. You know, we're like, this isn't working. So, you know, they were the ones who really pushed to bring back Foggy and Karen, you know, for that first episode and stuff like that. So apparently that also resulted in a change in what they were going to do with the Punisher character. So in addition to John Bernthal not originally being in the show, they brought him in, they filmed the scene, and apparently they had to do some reshoots because this scene was not supposed to be in this episode. The scene between Punisher and Daredevil was supposed to be later in the season. But after they did some retooling, they decided to bring it earlier. And so they had to change the dialogue, but John Bernthal was not available. So apparently they had to, like, film different bits. Like, that scene was as excellent as the scene is. And I feel like it's an excellent scene. It wasn't all filmed, like, in one piece, you know, in one shot, you know, like, kind of thing. Like, it's pieced together, and sometimes they're not even acting off each other, but you can't even tell because
you'd never know.
A fantastic scene.
Yeah, I thought that the Punisher made an excellent foil for Matt to run up against emotionally, you know, because he's been, you know, so emotionally distant about Foggy, and I loved how, you know, Frank Castle challenges him and calls him on it. And I mean, just emotionally breaks Matt Murdock in the moment. I thought it was like a wave crashing on the shore. I mean, it was, I was really taken by the scene, and the fact that it was shot in multiple sessions over a period of time kind of blows my mind on how well edited it was together. Cause I never had a sense of a change in tone.
Yeah. It was a very powerful scene. I was struck, and I've still never actually watched the Punisher series. I need to.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. For what it's worth, I love the first season of the Punisher. The second season, I'm very lukewarm on. I feel like I'm probably in the minority there. But yeah, you got to watch it, Andrew. It's a good show.
You're not alone, Andrew. I haven't seen it either.
Oh my God, Wayne.
My goal is,
how are you guys even on a comic book podcast?
Well, my goal is to go back and rewatch all the Netflix stuff from the beginning and watch it in a cohesive thing. I just have not found time because that's a big undertaking. Speaking of which, how many episodes do we know how many episodes are going to be in Daredevil Reborn?
I think it's 10 and 10.
Because I do kind of agree with Aaron that this whole Muse teasing feels very out of place. But if they have, maybe a little tacked on at the moment, but if they have 10 episodes to work with, then it'll probably rise up in the second half of the season to become more prominent. So hopefully it'll feel natural, hopefully.
Yeah.
So the stinger at the end of this episode was, you know, Wilson Fisk eating in his private dining room.
Whoa. Private dungeon. Go on.
I believe it's a private dining room, doubling as a dungeon.
Yeah, he was eating in it. Yeah.
He was eating in it, but there was like obviously a table that had been carried in.
Well, and I love that, you know, in that scene, and I know where I'm going to let you get to your point here in a second, Aaron. I love that, you know, throughout the series, we've seen Wilson Fisk eating very delicately, mm-hmm. you know, small, beautiful portioned plates. In the dungeon, it's just a giant plate of, you know, massive plate of food. And I was like, oh, okay. Like it certainly felt like an intentional, you know, like here's where Wilson Fisk is truly himself mm-hmm. versus the face he puts on to the outside world.
Yeah, so, you know, we in the therapy sessions with, you know, Vanessa and Wilson, you know, the marriage counseling, we understand that Vanessa, while Wilson was away, had an affair with Adam. And, you know, Vanessa made Wilson swear that he wouldn't kill him. And yet, after having had a conversation with Adam, we learn that Adam has not been seen again. And nobody knows where Adam is. So at the end of this episode, we cut to, you know, Wilson eating, you know, in his private dining dungeon. And we see a cage in which Adam is located. True to his word, the kingpin hasn't killed him. He's just got him tucked away so that Adam can watch him eat. I was like, yeah, this is my kind of guy. This is totally what I would do.
There's been several times where, you know, we have seen Vincent D'Onofrio's, you know, scarred knuckles, you know, uh-huh. where he's obviously been punching something. Like, where has he been wailing yeah. on someone? And then uh-huh. he saw Adam like, oh, maybe I know where he's been wailing
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
On a semi-regular basis. Maybe that's his post-dinner treat to himself. Maybe that's his dessert.
It is a scene that reminds me very much of a book I read several years back called The Berkut, which is set in the final days of World War II. And we find out at the end of the book that Stalin has Hitler in a similar cage sitting in his dining room. And, you know, Hitler has to, you know, watch Stalin be Stalin.
I definitely got some cask of Amontillado vibes off mm-hmm. of that. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously he's not being bricked up, but he might get bricked up in that little cubby he's stuck in.
Yeah.
And now, do you think Vanessa really doesn't know where he is?
I think she doesn't. I think she assumes that Fisk killed him.
Because, you know, they both, when they were asked in therapy, they both were very quickly like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Both of them seemed a little too quick to answer that question.
Well, I think I don't know because, you know,
he's a liar.
In his dungeon. Yeah. And she's I don't know because she suspects that even though he gave his word that he wouldn't kill him, I think she thinks that he is dead.
So what episode is it, do you think, that Matt's going to find out that his significant other is counseling the kingpin? What episode does that come out?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but I'm looking forward to that.
And do you think she's going to end up in the refrigerator?
Oh, I do. I think bad things happen to her.
I think Muse finds her.
She's got going in the refrigerator written all over her.
That's no good. I like her. I like the character.
I do too. I do too. And I like the two of them together.
Yeah. Matt is not allowed to be happy in a relationship.
Correct. Yeah, it's fair. I mean, it's not fair, but it's
fridged in the last episode of the season.
One of two things happen. Both things may happen. She finds out that he's Daredevil and is, you know, wildly objects to that. And then she gets fridged. So,
She's getting fridged by the end of this season. Guarantee she's getting fridged.
But first, she'll break Matt's heart. and then she'll get fridged.
Well, man, break maybe she'll
start all over again.
She'll break his heart, and then there's gonna be she'll even like a message that seems like reconciliation's a possibility, and then she gets fridged. Uh-huh.
Yeah. All the salt in that wound. Yeah.
Poor Matt.
Yeah.
I do like how Frank Castle is talking to him, like people, or maybe Matt was talking to him, was like, people like us don't deserve good things. Yeah, it was Matt, because he was talking about what a good person Foggy was. He's like, but people like us. Yeah. Like, Matt, you put yourself in the same category as Frank Castle. That's dark, man. Yeah. It's not a healthy place to be. Well, I'm excited.
Any other comments about Daredevil?
No, other than it's really good. And,
you know, I think he would have been eligible. I think he would have been eligible for the Fantastic Four family because he was a member of the Fantastic Four for an issue or two.
Oh, he was. I mean, was that your March Madness notification? Like, get to it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
The timeout is over. Time to resume the game.
That's right. So,
yeah, there are so many characters you could have used by that. You could have brought in Wolverine or Spider-Man or Hulk.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Ghost Rider.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a whole different cast and crew.
And you did not use She-Hulk.
I had her on my initial draft, but I had to make some changes so I could fit in the Yancey Street Gang and the Newsboy Legion.
Did you have Crystal?
I'm sure She Thing got left out so we could have Willie Lumpkin.
That's true.
Was Crystal on your original
list? She was. Okay. She was. But I opted for Lockjaw instead.
I do like Lockjaw.
Yeah, that one was a good choice.
Yeah. I mean, having the dog v. dog combat was a good choice.
Yeah. Well, speaking of dog versus dog, you know, we at least have dog versus chew toy in our first round in the Baxter Building quadrant or region, Crypto versus Mr. Fantastic.
Intriguing matchup.
I love the description, dog versus chew toy.
it's not far off. I mean,
he's Mr. Fantastic is essentially a great big Nylabone.
He's rubber. Yeah, he's very rubbery. Yeah,
that's right.
Stretch Armstrong there.
So I have been giving this a lot of thought because
have you really?
I have too, actually. I have. And, you know, I think to the untrained eye, to the novice, I should say, that, you know, you think Crypto is going to win this battle. But, you know, Mr. Fantastic isn't just a stretchy, bendy guy. He's not just your Stretch Armstrong, right? He is also a genius, right? He is a next level genius, the kind of mind that comes along once in a thousand years. I mean, he is, you know, super, super smart and an inventor and someone who is always prepared, you know. So I was thinking, you know, there are any number of weapons that Mr. Fantastic has utilized over the years. Like there's the Demolo gun, which, you know, almost leveled the city of New York. There is the Vibra gun, which steals the strength of the target. But I'm thinking in this fight, he uses the Paralysis Ray gun, as originally seen in Fantastic Four number 13 in January 1963. and he uses it to paralyze Crypto.
That's a deep cut. That is a deep cut. Yeah. But here's the thing. Crypto has super speed. You think Mr. Fantastic is going to be able to get a beat on him?
He doesn't have to get in the first shot because of his stretchiness. Crypto hits him but doesn't take him out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that, Crypto's chewing on his left arm while his right arm has the gun.
That's right.
I mean, that's not a bad theory, because he does have, you know, Mr. Fantastic does have some extra durability with his rubbery nature, able to absorb a good bit of damage.
He's resilient.
Indeed. You know, I think I was leaning towards Mr. Fantastic, well, not necessarily for his paralysis gun.
Ray gun. Get it right.
Sorry. I'm very ashamed right now. Hopefully family does not disown me. But yes, the paralysis ray gun. I was thinking more that Mr. Fantastic would just literally be able to wrap up Crypto. And, you know, as Crypto starts to maybe gnaw on his arm a little bit, just, you know, immobilize him and take him out of the fight. So, but yeah, I would also tend to go with Mr. Fantastic on this one.
Yeah, as much as I love Crypto, this is a intelligence versus a dog fight. And also, like it was mentioned, Crypto hits hard, but he just stretches.
He's
going to catch him off guard right away.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like, yeah, my vote's for Mr. Fantastic on this one. Just to win, it's intelligence versus speed. But Mr. Fantastic has certainly dealt with superpowered beings, at least the level of Crypto's.
Oh.
Strength.
Well, more. Well, stronger than Crypto, really.
Exactly. And been able to take them out.
I mean, if he can stop Galactus. If he
has 5 minutes to plan. Yeah. If he has 5 minutes to plan, I'm sure he'll be fine.
Yeah.
So it's a clean sweep for Mr. Fantastic.
I'm going to be honest.
Crypto doesn't die. I just want to put that out there.
Who would? What type of dark person?
That's why he uses the paralysis ray gun, because he doesn't want to kill Crypto.
That's bad, too. He needs to
take Crypto out of the fight.
What type of dark soul would have a dog die in a make-believe Final Four battle? Who would do that?
Some horrible, horrible person.
Correct. Like,
really.
Ouch. That one hurt.
All right. So Mr. Fantastic takes the first matchup in this, in the what is it called? The Elite Eight?
The Elite Eight.
Yep. It's not the Hateful Eight.
I mean, we could call it that, but Elite Eight is the traditional term.
Okay. So the Elite Eight of the Baxter Building Quadrant. Or region.
There we go.
So our next matchup is Sue Storm versus the Kryptonian Kellex.
I'm just saying, a lot of these fights are going to be one-sided today. This is obviously Sue Storm every day of the week, three times on Saturday, four times on Sunday. Sue Storm's going to beat Kellex. And if you say otherwise, I question your objectiveness.
As much as I want to say otherwise, just to, you know, dig at you, Andrew.
Yeah.
Yeah. She shields herself and then projects a barrel shield directly through his chest.
Yeah.
I just don't see any way he stands a chance against her.
No. I mean, Sue Storm can beat Superwoman. She can for sure beat Kellex.
Paul.
I'm also with Sue Storm on this. I mean, not to, I mean, poor Kellex. But, you know, we are certainly, you know, in the round in which all those characters that just skirted by are now paired against much stronger beings, like Jimmy Olsen and Dr. Doom. It's coming up for the Yancey Street Gang and Old Man Jonathan Kent, which I know it's not Old Man Jonathan Kent, but it's actually kind of funny to think of it that way. But before we get there, Sue Storm, you know, certainly can overpower Kellex in this scenario.
So let me ask you this. Uh-oh. So you got Sue Storm.
Yes.
You know, and we all acknowledge she is, you know, low key the strongest member of the Fantastic Four. Her powers have the most diversity. You know, she's got
the poop window. So
it's very much a Green Lantern situation where her strength is her willpower. You know, we all acknowledge Sue Storm's got game, but Kellex. Wouldn't he, number one, we established in the first round that he has all of that Kryptonian warfare knowledge, right? So he's got military strategic knowledge that he can access.
Sure.
He also has the tools and resources of the Fortress of Solitude available to him. And I'm not disagreeing with you guys about Sue Storm, but I just want you to consider for a moment. He could deploy the Kryptonian battle suit, couldn't he?
We went over this last week when I suggested Herbie could use things that were not part of his being and was shouted down. So, no, he cannot.
Yeah, and he's not going against an inexperienced Sue Storm. We're going against modern Sue Storm, who has all of these years of experience.
Yeah.
It were young Sue Storm after she got her powers, I would give it to Kellex.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm not saying that it would be just like – Sue Storm walks into a room and Kellex dies instantly.
I am.
No, because I do happen to agree with Aaron that he's, you know, he passed the first round because he's shifty. He's certainly got enough resources at his disposal, but at the same time, yeah, no, I think Sue Storm takes this one for sure.
Yeah, I appreciate Aaron putting forth a alternate possibility, because I do like to do that as well. So I appreciate that, but no, I don't see Killix having a chance, a prayer, or even a dream.
Okay, so it's Sue Storm, which means in the next round, Fantastic has to fight his wife.
This must have been during the domestic abuse round.
Oh, I was going to say, this must have been when they were estranged from each other. Mm-hmm.
Now that's going to be a good fight.
Yeah, that's going to be an epic fight.
All right, so moving over to the Metropolis Quadrant.
Or region.
Region. We've got the battle you demanded. Dr. Doom versus Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen.
Okay, hear me out.
Mr. Action, Turtle Boy.
Hear me out.
Elongated lad.
Jimmy Olsen gets into the Doom's throne room by pretending to want to do a story, a puff piece on Doom to help him with his image issues, his PR issues. Doom agrees, thinking, you know, Jimmy's obviously easily malleable, can be easily manipulated, right? So, Jimmy Olsen shows up, has his camera, has his pad. Sits down, does the whole interview, ask all the questions, is going to write this glowing thing for Doom. Doom is well pleased. And then Jimmy Olsen's like, ooh, can I take a quick picture? And Doom is like, oh, of course. And so what Doom does not know is that hidden cleverly inside Jimmy's camera is actually a death ray.
Jimmy Olsen, of all people, he just happens to get a death ray.
Oh, he just picked it up off the street. Lex Luthor dropped it during a fight.
It was in the Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah, that's right. Kellex gave it to him before Sue Storm murdered him. And then he uses that and ambushes Doom and kills him.
So I give you that scenario. And he then discovers it's a Doom bot, because Doom isn't an idiot. Oh. And Doom grabs him by the back of the head and blasts his head through.
I love that, Wayne. That is awesome, man. Hats off to Wayne on that one.
Yeah, I don't think we can. I don't think I can surpass Wayne's mic drop there. I mean, it was in the previous scenario where I said, it's not like this character just walks into the room and the other character immediately dies. This is that scenario.
Well, and I think the important thing to note is that as Doom is about to, wring the life out of Jimmy Olsen, Jimmy Olsen is hitting his Superman signal watch. Superman doesn't come because the Silver Surfer killed him in the last round.
Yeah, and Paul, I disagree that it'll be just Doom walks in and kills him, because Doom is going to have to explain to him why he should be, enamored with him instead of Superman.
So you think Jimmy Olsen's
going to make it last?
So you think Jimmy Olsen's going to be in a cage in Doom's dining room, and Doom just every night at dinner is going to be talking to him about his mistakes?
Yeah.
Fair.
We didn't talk about it when we were talking about Daredevil, but there was an emphasis on the Latverian embassy.
There was.
In the fourth episode, which I very much enjoyed.
Well, so I do want to clarify on that, because I thought it was too. It was the Latvian embassy, which is an actual real thing.
I really thought
it was in reference to Latveria, but like it's Latvian it's Pride Day or something like that. And he goes to the Latvian embassy and he's like, why do I care about Latvian, whatever. And I looked it up, because I'm like, is this like, why aren't they saying Latveria? Because Latvian embassy and all that stuff, like, that's actually real.
I preferred it my way.
I did too. Like, I was like, well, that feels like a wasted opportunity to not just make it Latveria, but didn't want to.
Since we know Doom is coming, I would have loved. I thought they were just teasing the presence of Latveria. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, and in this, going back to Dr. Doom versus Jimmy Olsen, I do want to say, in my scenario, Jimmy Olsen doesn't die, because Jimmy Olsen's a broke kid with a camera. I feel like Doom just offers him a job. Doom's like,
he needs a photojournalist.
We need you to work.
Use my real superpower, money.
Yeah, for the state-run news agency, and just offers Jimmy a job, the Daily Latveria.
That's possible. Well, you know, speaking of mismatches, that brings us to the Yancey Street Gang facing off against Jonathan Kitt. Young Jonathan
Kitt. Curb stop right. That old man. They're going to curb stop him. They're violent out there in Yancey Street.
But seriously.
Okay. So it's you know, Superman's son, Jonathan Kent, a.k.a. Superman, versus.
Was he never Superboy?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm making that
I mean,
up.
When he was a boy, before he got converted to...
But they never really called him that.
That's yeah, true.
No. Okay.
So it's Jonathan Kent versus the Yancey Street Gang. And, boys, what do you think? I think it's Yancey Street, right?
Stop.
Sure, it's made about 10 normal humans.
I think they prank him and hurt his feelings.
Well, see, you know, what they don't realize as they go to throw cans and things at him is his dad was just beaten by the Silver Surfer. He's pissed off.
Yeah, I mean, I just had a 5-minute theory about how Jimmy could beat Doom, and that even didn't work out. So, no, I don't see a way the Yancey Street boys are going to defeat Superman Jonathan Kitt. No,
now,
no.
I will tell you, next week's battle of Jonathan Kent, well, assuming that he wins. He's gonna win. Versus Dr. Doom.
Yeah,
that's actually a pretty interesting potential battle. You know, I mean, Jonathan Kent has certainly done battle against people, you know, characters like Ultraman or Injustice Superman. So, I mean, in this specific battle, though, of Jonathan Kent versus Yancey Street Gang, yeah, they're all getting thrown in the sun. Like it's nothing.
Oh, God. Okay.
So you're saying that the death of Superman, Jonathan Kent's father, has pushed Jonathan Kent over the edge such that he murders the Yancey Street Gang?
Yeah, I'm not going with that one, Paul. I think this is Jonathan Kent. He comes in, and it isn't enough to beat the Yancey Street Gang. He gets them all in, like, counseling and gets them jobs. And this is the social justice Superman. He redeems them.
Fair, fair. I will go with that. I will go with Wayne's much less violent version.
Okay, so it's Jonathan Kent. So our matchup next week here in the Metropolis Quadrant is Dr. Doom versus Jonathan Kent.
That's going to be a good fight.
That's going to be a good fight. All right, so we're venturing all the way over to New York City, where we've got Mr. Mixus Piddlick versus Bibbo.
God, that's an annoying comic book right there.
Uh-huh.
And you see that shit on the shelf, and you're like, who would buy this?
it's not going to be on the shelf like that. It's going to be the backup feature. You know, dominating more than half of your action comics.
No, this is going to be an April Fool's Day special, and I'm buying it.
You are, Wayne.
If I saw both those characters on a cover, I would buy it.
I would buy it for Bibbo, because when do you ever see Bibbo on a cover? But I'm not a fan of Mr. Mixaplix.
I have a hot take here.
Okay. If it's Bibbo winning, I'm excited to hear it.
I think Bibbo wins this fight.
I love that. Why?
I think Bibbo wins this fight because he gets Mr. Mixus Piddlick all hopped up on soda cola, making him sick. And then he just beats the living tar out of him.
Why would he get sick for drinking soda?
Soda cola. It's too much sugar. He just drinks it, you know, just one bottle after another of soda cola.
He gets him so drunk he says his name backwards and done.
And then he takes him to the Big Belly Burger.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go this route.
It's terrible. I hate it. I hate every page. I'm turning. I'm like, fuck this.
If we want to go this route, why don't we say that Bibbo just begets, you know, starts drinking with Mr. Mixaplick, gets him become an alcoholic.
Oh, and, because I think Mr. Mixus Piddlick can handle his booze. I just don't think he can handle his soda or cola.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no, I love Bibbo. I do. But Bibbo's not smart enough to outsmart Mr. Mixus Piddlick.
So it's not really outsmarting him. It's not strategy. He just, you know, gets him hopped up on the soda cola.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to impair him enough to lose to Bibbo. I want Bibbo to win. My heart is with Bibbo on this, Aaron. I would love a possible rationale I could get behind for Bibbo to win, but I'm not seeing it. I don't think your soda cola theory holds water.
Mr. So Mixer Spitalik turns him into a soda cola.
And then drinks him. Yeah, exactly.
No, I gotta. So we're gonna have a tie here.
Oh lord.
Because I actually am on the Bimbo train with this.
Thank you.
I don't know about Aaron's soda cola theory, but I feel
and Big Belly Burger. Don't forget about that.
Big Belly Burger. I feel like Bibbo has he's not a genius, but I feel like he has a secret street smart intelligence that, you know, I actually think he could find a way to trick Mr. Spitalik or Mix Spitalik into saying, because that's the thing, right? He has to say his name backwards and it goes back to the fifth dimension.
Yes.
Whatever dimension. So, like, I feel like Bibbo could actually finagle a way to do that. I feel like Bibbo, one, is he's such a kind-hearted, you know, easy, you know, kind of comes across as dumb character, and Mr. Mixapitlick would be like, well, I feel bad kind of fucking with this dude's life. And so he wouldn't, and then they'd become friends and he'd get him drunk, and at some point Mixapitlick would say his name backward and back to the fifth dimension. I'm actually on the Bibbo train here.
I do feel like these characters would bond because Superman's their favorite.
Yeah. Exactly. They would bond over Superman. So we have a tie, which means I have to break out the Google coin flip. All right. Aaron, you're on the Bibbo train. Call it.
Heads.
Let's see where it ends. It ends at heads.
There we go. Bibbo.
This is the upset of the century.
Bibbo makes it in the next round.
I feel like this is going to spawn a host of internet conspiracy theories about how Bibbo could possibly win this game. There's going to be accusations of fight fixing. I'm happy Bibbo's moving on, but I think there's going to be some call of shenanigans from the audience.
Well, here's the bad thing. Like, the next battle, so Bibbo makes it to the next round, right?
Yes.
But the next battle's kind of tricky because the way I want it to go is that next week Bibbo faces the Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because those two would just be like one.
He doesn't necessarily face the Thing. It could be Brainiac.
But that's my point. I said, like,
if it
goes the Brainiac way, that's much less interesting than Bibbo and the Thing. But I guess we'll see. Because our next battle is Brainiac versus the Thing.
So what are we thinking?
You know, I gotta say, I mean, the Thing is, I think, more intelligent than Annihilus, but I still think Brainiac is going to be. I mean, Brainiac has fought brawlers. He's defeated them at times, if maybe sometimes temporarily. The Thing is no Superman. I tend to think Brainiac has the edge in this fight.
Yeah, I'm. You know. Obviously, like, Lobo has defeated Brainiac,
yes,
but not by himself, and that's the thing. If, you know, in a battle of Brainiac versus the Thing one-on-one, I mean, I think the far superior intellect of Brainiac, it Thing's not a match for it.
Man, Paul, now I want to see Thing versus Lobo.
Right.
That would be a good fight.
I don't see brute strength beating Brainiac, because, you know, we've seen that doesn't work with Superman, right?
Yeah.
It takes the combination of ingenuity and intelligence and brute strength to beat Brainiac. And
the Fantastic Four take Brainiac. Thing by himself, I don't think can.
Mr. Fantastic could take Brainiac, in my opinion, and the battle of the geniuses, if you will. But no, I don't think the Thing can do it.
Yeah. So it sounds like we're all aligned that this is a Brainiac match.
Yeah, agreed. Sadly, you know, Bibbo and the Thing, they'll share beers another day. But today is not that day.
Today is not that day.
Well, we can always do a what-if version of March Madness. Or an Elseworlds March Madness.
What if the Thing beat Brainiac in the IOM March Madness?
Ooh, what if versus Elseworlds? There you go.
That's actually...
Yeah,
that's a good one for next year.
Next year, yeah.
Yeah, like Red Sun Superman, you'd have Wolverine Dracula. Ooh, that's our vampire Wolverine.
Ooh, yeah.
I like it.
I like this a lot. Yeah.
Okay, so coming out of the New York City quadrant will be Bibbo versus Brainiac.
Insanity right there.
Should be interesting.
Sanity.
All right, so moving over to the Fortress of Solitude quadrant. Or region. We've got Supergirl versus Agatha Harkness. Now, you know, we have pointed out that the Superman, super family are vulnerable to magic.
It's one of his only few vulnerabilities between kryptonite and magic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, Supergirl kind of goes in here, you know, leading with a vulnerability. What do we think? How is this one going to play out, guys?
I mean, I would love to see Agatha Harkness adopt Supergirl as a new pupil and teach her to be a witch. I would read that comic book. And then you could have a mystical member of the super family.
Mm-hmm. You know, if this was the Peter David version of Supergirl, who is an angel, right? We wouldn't have that vulnerability.
True.
But we're dealing with a Kryptonian Supergirl here.
I do love the Matrix Supergirl.
Oh, I like Matrix Supergirl too. I miss Matrix, and really wish they'd bring her back into the DC universe.
Yeah, but I do feel like the magic is the key indicator here. Unless agreed. There's a scenario in which, to Andrew's point, Supergirl is taken under Agatha's wing and then betrays her after she learns all her secrets.
But is Supergirl really that deceptive? Is she really that double dealing? I don't know.
Well, the thing that I think helps Supergirl in this fight that maybe doesn't help, would not have helped like Superman, is that Supergirl is a lot more impetuous.
Mm.
You know, she acts faster and can be more brutal than Superman. And I think that works in her advantage here against Agatha Harkness, who, you know, is an older person and, is not going to be as quick to respond as an angry Kryptonian.
Yeah. Supergirl is scrappy and angry and had a recent story arc where she went to a planet without her powers so she could, you know, fight with like swords and things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I want it to be Supergirl, but I got to give it to Agatha.
I tend to give it to Agatha too. I feel a little bad, you know, pulling out the magic button, but I think the magic gives Agatha the edge. I mean, you talked about the scenarios, but you know, even Agatha could possibly, you know, use divination magic to know what's coming, so that she'd be prepared. So I tend to give it to Agatha here.
Very good. So we've got Agatha taking this round.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Wow. I agree.
So last match of the night. Eradicator versus the Silver Surfer.
One of the better matches of the night. I'm still going to go. I think Silver Surfer outclassed the Eradicator, but I'm certainly open to anyone who has a theory about how the Eradicator wins.
Paul, no. Any thoughts?
I don't have a scenario where the Eradicator wins this battle. A Silver Surfer doesn't even bother with letting the Eradicator talk here. He just blows the dude away. Like, I mean, Silver Surfer certainly has, from a strength capacity standpoint, Silver Surfer takes the cake on this one. And, I mean, for what it's worth, you know, from an A plus, you know, A equals B equals C kind of scenario, technically, Silver Surfer beats Superman, and Superman has beaten the Eradicator. So,
yeah, but Silver Surfer
beats the Eradicator.
Does Eradicator have a weakness to Kryptonite, though?
No. There's a weakness to being blown up, though.
Yeah, right. But my point is that the way the Silver Surfer, the only way Silver Surfer, in my mind, beat Superman was the ability to produce, that he could just create kryptonite out of other matter.
Fair.
So, I mean, Eradicator does not have that fatal flaw, that weakness, if you will, that Silver Surfer to exploit. But I do tend to, again, agree that I think Silver Surfer outclasses Eradicator. Yeah.
See, the one thing I'll give Eradicator... He has the ability to absorb certain types of energy.
Mm.
Could he absorb
the power cosmic? Yeah, that's a good question.
That's what I'm noodling on. I think that he can. And if he can do that, can't he beat the Silver Surfer? I mean, you know, you think about his abilities. You know, he's superhuman strength and vulnerability, superhuman stamina. He's got superhuman speed, superhuman breath, super hearing, enhanced vision, plus... You add in the energy projection, the cybernetic awareness, so that he can, you know, employ, he can influence and employ, you know, other machines to aid him. He's got mechanokinesis. He's got enhanced intellect and telepathy. I mean, I think it's certainly a really strong match.
Yeah, and Superman couldn't absorb power cosmic, but right. If we think Eradicator can, that's the... that levels the playing field.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm rereading exactly his energy absorption power here to see. But I tend to agree with you. If you can absorb and redirect, because, I mean, that's Silver Surfer's main tool in his toolbox is the power cosmic. I'm sure he can fly. He's got some enhanced strength. He's got some enhanced durability. But if you can negate the power cosmic, I think that does kind of shift it over to the eradicator side of the field.
Well, and, you know, he's able to take that energy that he absorbs and, you know, send it back as an energy blast.
Yeah.
Does the absorption of the power cosmic supercharge him even more? Right. Does it, you know, make him on par with one of the cosmically aware beings, one of the power cosmic beings? Does it make him, you know, does it give him that additional oomph to just clock Silver Surfer?
I think it does.
I think so too.
Yeah, I went into this thinking it was going to be a vote for Silver Surfer, but the more I think about it, the more I'm thinking Eradicator.
Yeah. Eradicator!
Wow. Well done, Eradicator.
If Eradicator makes it to the finale, he will have fought his way there, because he took out Namor in round one, and then he's fighting Silver Surfer in round two.
Yeah. Yeah, he's had two tough fights so far.
Crazy. Two tough fights. So, Paul, I didn't get your vote. Were you in on Eradicator as well?
I was actually in on Silver Surfer, but you guys have convinced me. I mean, Eradicator has taken this round.
I'd like to point out that we are much better at convincing each other on these matches than we ever are during the Funny Book Awards.
Yeah.
True.
We are entrenched in our opinions on the funnies.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more interpretation and hypotheticals with these battles that we're putting forth in our heads.
All right. So for next time.
So, and I just want to that will complete the I misspoke earlier. So this completes the Sweet 16, because there are 16 teams left, and that now we now have our Elite Eight.
Okay, so this was Sweet 16. We've been saying it wrong this entire podcast.
I'm sorry.
I blame the only person who knows anything about March Madness for misleading us.
It was eight battles, and so I said the wrong thing. But there were 16 teams, so Sweet 16, because it's the number of teams, not the number of games. So next
Jimmy Olsen was not Elite.
You know, he was just sweet Jimmy Olsen. Sweet 16 finished. We've got our Elite Eight now. We've got Mr. Fantastic versus Sue Storm in the Baxter Building. I cannot wait for that discussion. Then over Metropolis, we've got Dr. Doom throwing down Jonathan Kent. So, John Kent's going to have some home field advantage.
Solid battle too.
Yeah. Yep. And then somehow we have Bibbo facing off against Brainiac. I wonder who's going to win that one. But who knows? Bibbo's is a dark horse here. Then finally, that's in the New York City. So, heck, Bibbo's got home field advantage. Then down the Fortress of Solitude, we've got Agatha Harkness facing off against the Eradicator.
Eradicator! Well, hey, we want to know what you thought of March Madness Round 2. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, guys, I am so excited to wrap this up next time in round three.
The Elite Eight.
Wah, wah, wah. Very exciting. Very exciting. All right. We'll do it all again next time.
Got you then.
See ya.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.